in Canada. Everyone's very nice, as I remember.
West Coast or East Coast?
I lived in Nova Scotia till I was 8, but all my family's in the West Coast, so.
Oh, you can't decide.
Yeah, sorry. I can't decide North or South or East or West. So today I'm going to talk about some recently completed work with Nathaniel Craig on supersymmetric twin Higgs models. First of all, Gordon showed me the hockey stick yesterday, and I realized that maybe I needed to make some changes at the last minute to make my presentation more culturally appropriate. So we're going to drop the puck with a discussion of the situation for naturalness right now and why that might motivate you to think about these kinds of models like this, specifically the supersymmetric twin Higgs. In the first period, I'll talk about, just from an IR perspective, so not worrying about supersymmetry, just how this twin Higgs mechanism solves a lot of problems for the little hierarchy. In the second period, I'll talk about how you embed this mechanism in a supersymmetric model, giving you a full UV completion, and what you win by that in terms of tuning compared to a more vanilla supersymmetric model, and also what supersymmetry brings to a game versus a composite completion, for instance. And then in the third period, coming down to the wire, we'll talk about the interesting Higgs phenomenology you get in these models. And at the end, if the score is tied for naturalness, then we'll have a shootout. So let's get...
So where do we beat each other? Snap out of each other?
I will throw people in the penalty box if the questions are too harsh. So.
We need a shootout. Right now, it looks like, at least C10, zero, right?
OK, well, maybe we'll have some interesting things to say about that. OK, so first off, let's talk about naturalness in the context of Higgs properties. So one of the most important LHC results, obviously, is we now know a lot about the properties of the Higgs and of the Higgs potential. And we can ask, what are these 8 TeV results telling us? So the first thing they're kind of telling us is that there's some room for deviations from a standard model like Higgs, but the models that we're going to need to think about probably need to have some type of decoupling limit where they're behaving mostly like a single standard model Higgs doublet with higher dimensional operators suppressed by at least a moderately high scale compared to the weak scale. And the second important thing this tells us is the Higgs mass, which is kind of at this interesting value of around 125 GeV, which, as we all know, is a little bit high for the simplest supersymmetric models and a little bit low for what you might naively expect from kind of a composite solution. So we also have some results generally about naturalness of the weak scale. And the most important issue here is what are the limits on heavy colored particles, right? So in the context of SUSY, you're worried about the most direct connection to tuning is coming from limits on the stop. So at 8 TeV, limits kind of generically, unless you tune the spectrum in the MSSM, go up to around 700 GeV for stops. So this is kind of at the level of 10 or 20% tuning, if you're being generous in how you're counting. If people have done work on more realistic models, and would maybe say it's closer to a few percent tuning, if you really want to be realistic about the spectrum and counting all the tunings. I think the point here is I don't think too many people would be very uncomfortable with the idea of naturalness if we turn on LHC 14 and find a 700 GeV stop, right? But things are going to get pretty bad after the LHC 14 if we don't find anything. So the projections for just the stop search limits and, of course, other colored particle searches are very stringent, is going all the way up to 1400 GeV after 3000 inverse femtobarns at LHC 14. So we might have to reevaluate what we're thinking about naturalness after these results. And so that's kind of the context we're going to be thinking about, is what can we do to relieve some of this tension with naturalness in the face of increasing limits on colored partners. So there's kind of two points of view you can take on this issue. So there's the kind of stone tablet view of naturalness that, you know, we don't this is a nice guiding principle that maybe things are simple and there shouldn't be any tuning. And so you know, you need some rough measure, but maybe 10% tuning is your cutoff of when, okay, it's tuning, you know, models are natural. So, but you could have the attitude that we don't really know anything beyond UE physics. So once you're past 10% tuning, what does this, does 1% tuning versus 1 in 1,000 tuning really mean anything? And so this is a valid point of view that maybe once we're past some order one tuning, we just don't understand how to use this principle, and maybe it's not something we can apply. So that's one point of view. I think there's also, at least, there's a point of view that I'll take that it's still interesting to use the naturalist as a guiding principle in the sense that since we don't really know any concrete measure of what a good amount of tuning is, it's useful to think about what it costs us in terms of other principles that guide the types of models we think about. So however, I'll have interesting things to say both for the fair weather stone tablet fans of naturalness and for people interested in these other questions. But the two kind of questions I'd like to ask more generally are, how compatible is naturalness with our experimental prejudices, right? So can thinking more generally about naturalness tell us other things to look for? And yeah, does it conflict with our other guiding principles and to what degree? And so these are big questions. We're going to explore them in a very limited context of a single model. So this will be the question I'll try to answer in the context of a supersymmetric twin Higgs. But I hope going from that simple, going from this one model, you can kind of get some interesting insights into these questions. OK, so going back to this issue of how compatible is naturalness with our other guiding principles, what might we trade for naturalness of the weak scale, right? So there's a game we play in thinking about these models. And it looks like we might have to give up something. So what can we give up? And people have studied this issue a lot, right? So in a model of TV physics solving the hierarchy problem, you might also like to get the Higgs properties naturally out, electroweak precision and flavor safety. And also, it's nice if you get weak scale dark matter engaged coupling unification, right? And there's been lots of work exploring how these other principles, how compatible are these principles with naturalness in face of LHC results. So for instance, there's a recent review by Chaki and Balazzini and a few other people on composite models discussing these models tend to come into conflict with Higgs properties and electroweak precision. There's also a paper a year ago by a recent perimeter acquisition and some other Stanford people on SUSY models, how you can trade gauge coupling unification or weak scale dark matter. So either say add Dirac Gaginos or barrier number violation to improve the tuning in face of experimental limits. So there's one more direction you can go, which is thinking about giving up on simplicity or parsimony of the models we're thinking about. So see if we can win something by extending past the minimal supersymmetric models. So you know, most of the limits on naturalists are presented in frames of frameworks where the word minimal appears at least once. So that's kind of the direction we're going to go. And it's actually natural to think about both these issues simultaneously of gauge coupling unification and minimality of the models.
So what do you mean by exchange for Higgs properties? You mean like more interesting?
So you can. In some models, you can change, you can lower the degree of fine tuning of the weak scale, but at the price of introducing tuning into Higgs properties. So, you know, for example, in the NMSSM, you can decrease the tuning, but then you have to tune the Higgs mass down by changing the quartic, right? So this is kind of the general idea. Okay. So what direction are we going to go if we're going to go past the minimal models? So the interesting direction I think to go is that this idea of minimality kind of motivates considering a single solution, so a single step solution to a hierarchy problem, introduce physics at one new scale, at the TV scale, say, that protects the weak scale at all orders from any higher scales in the model, right? So this is the normal picture of supersymmetry for a composite model. And what this buys you is at tree level, it's natural to separate this new physics, which usually involves top partners, from the parameters of the Higgs potential. So you get a little bit of separation between your scale of new physics and the electroweak scale, right? Though this, you know, generally turns out to be pretty small, and this is the source of tension in these models. The kinds of models that are interesting to look at are ones where you add extra steps protecting you from the highest scales. And in particular, a way that you can do this is to add near the TEV scale or near the electroweak scale new physics that protects you from the dominant one loop contributions, so the one loop quadratic contributions to the Higgs potential. So that's kind of the name of the game. And then a decade or so higher, you can finish the job, so to speak, and complete to a model that protects you from the remaining one loop logarithmic divergences and from the higher order diagrams, right? So this is the idea of double protection. This has been studied in the context of combining SUSY with compositeness, SUSY with extra dimensions, in a number of ways. And today I'm going to talk about one other way you can do this. But an important point is that when you only have to solve the one loop quadratic part of the hierarchy problem, you can use a method that can solve the entire hierarchy problem, but this also opens up new ways of canceling out the potential and of canceling out these contributions. And the twin Higgs mechanism is one nice way that this opens up. And the other thing is that these models, you know, you're introducing an entire new scale and a lot of new structure to accomplish this. So there's a complexity problem with these models of understanding what are their predictions. And something we're going to use is that now that we precisely have precise experimental input on what the low energy properties of the Higgs are, that gives us a lot of guidance in how we can explore these models. Okay, so the talk in one set of diagrams is up here. So the basic idea for the twin Higgs is that you introduce a mirror sector of, so an identical copy of all of the standard model particles with identical masses, but charged under a separate gauge group, so an identical copy of the standard model gauge group. And the contributions of these particles can cancel out the dominant contributions in a way I'll talk about shortly. And then eventually you need to UV complete this, and the way I will do it in this talk is to use supersymmetry. So you introduce a copy of both the standard model superpartners and the twin sector, the mirror sector superpartners, to cancel the remaining divergences. So what will this win us? The principal attraction of this is that the states you're adding at the low scale, so these extra states have masses comparable to the standard model particles, but they're uncharged under the standard model gauge group. So there aren't collider limits on these particles. You also get some interesting novel Higgs physics that you don't get from, for instance, the two Higgs doublet model. And by the nature of this mechanism, you can get models with extremely low fine tuning. By adding supersymmetry to the mix, we're hoping to preserve gauge coupling unification, though I'll talk about how you can modify this picture to lose gauge coupling unification. But it's very simple how you would, how you preserve it. You're, by adding an exact copy of everything in the MSSM, you just simultaneously get gauge coupling unification in both the standard model and mirror sector. I will go into much more detail in a, shortly. Yeah, so, yeah. This is just a summary.
Your H and A is one Higgs, the H and B is the other Higgs.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So there's.
But why do you add those two diagrams?
So the Higgs is really a Goldstone. That's a partial a combination of the A and B sector Higgs. So I'll go into detail about this.
There's an effective minus sign in the way the.
Yeah, when you put in, when you realize these in terms of the Goldstone. Exactly.
Do you have any concrete idea about why there would be this identical mirror sector? I mean, it's fine to think that there's some other sectors of nature, but they have to be identical copies with identical couplings. Is that just to totally ad hoc, or
you no? Yeah. So you need yeah. So this needs to come from somewhere at a high scale. What's nice is that we'll see is you are able to push this up to an arbitrarily high scale, the scale of whatever of where this mirror symmetry is originating. So the simplest idea would just be to gauge the entire symmetry and then break it down to just the components you want, so the A and B sector components, and project out the off-diagonal components. You can also imagine getting this from string theory, but so this I'm not going to focus on too much, but it is natural to.
It still seems sort of like a miracle. Usually, if you have some big symmetry that breaks to some diagonal or something, you don't have two identical sectors. You usually have very different sectors. And I'm just wondering if there's anything other than hand waving that anybody's proposed that would actually give identical sectors.
I don't think anyone's written down a full UV model that this will come out of. I don't see any reason that it's not possible to do that, though. But I mean, I think the point is that you can push it away to arbitrarily high scale also. But this is a valid, I mean, this is something that happens when you go away from the simplest solution. So this is part of the price we're paying first. But yeah, so I guess, does that answer the question? OK. Yeah, OK, well, we'll push it away to as far scale as possible. OK. But yeah, so in the supersymmetric completion, we'll be able to maintain gauge coupling unification. To a few percent naturalists, you'll be able to push the Squarks and Guinos beyond the 14 TV reach. And you maintain this nice protection against electroweak precision and flavor observable contributions with the usual SUSY mechanisms. And then you also somewhat naturally get the Higgs mass in the right ballpark for the observed value. OK, so let's talk about how this twin Higgs mechanism works in detail. So first, I'll just talk in general about the Higgs's pseudo-Nambu-Goldstone boson, and what are kind of some of the general problems with this, and what's solved by the twin mechanism. Then we can talk about how Higgs property measurements are kind of lead to an irreducible tuning in these models. And then we can talk about generic issues for UV completing these models from the Goldstone picture to a complete model. OK. So going back to your earlier question, so we can talk about the Higgs' pseudo-Nambu-Goldstone boson, and we can do this. There are some general points I'll make, but I'm going to do it in a concrete model where the Higgs is emerging from a U4 global symmetry. So it's the Goldstone boson of a broken U4. And the way you embed the Higgs is just to gauge some of the generators of this U4, right? A convenient representation will just be to take these upper components, which I'll call HA or the standard model Higgs doublet to be gauged under SU2 left, right? And then the B sector for now, I won't worry about putting any dynamics in here. We'll just leave it alone. And then it will be convenient to go, obviously, to the nonlinear realization for the Goldstone directions. So the seven Goldstones you can break up into the Goldstones of the B sector, which we'll ignore for now, the Goldstones of the standard model, which are just eaten by the W and Z, and then this Higgs-like Goldstone. So this is what's giving you the observed light Higgs, which is just a rotation between the A and B sector of EBS. OK, and to give the previous slide in a picture, this is just a normal picture and trigonometry. We have an overall U4 breaking VEV. The Higgs-like Goldstone is a rotation of this VEV. And the projection into this A direction is the electroweak symmetry breaking VEV. OK. So this is just generic to models of a Higgs as a Goldstone boson. And what happens in these models is that you can do this at tree level and say that the dynamics of the the dynamics of the Higgs sector that generate the Goles and bosons, so that generate the VEV for the U4 breaking, respect to global symmetry, so have exact Goldstone bosons. But when you couple in the standard model to the Higgs sector, so the rest of the particles, you inevitably break the global symmetry, and so you introduce a potential for the Goldstone directions. So you could embed this in a way that would not break the global symmetry, but to do so, you would have to introduce new light colored particles and new light, so new light standard model gauge charged particles. So you're forced to introduce a potential by coupling the standard model particles to the Goldstone, right? And the most important contribution, obviously, is the one-loop contribution from the top sector, both because limits on colored particles are very stringent, and because it happens to have the largest coupling into the Higgs potential. Okay, so we can look at how this affects this example model. So here, the coupling, so the Yukawa coupling to the top of the HA component of the multiplet just gets the normal one loop contribution, right? And this generates a quadratic contribution, so a mass for this HA component that's sensitive to whatever physics is cutting off this top loop, so either top partners or fermionic or scalar top partners cutting off this loop. So I'll call that scale lambda t, just a generically the scale that cuts off the top contribution, right? So in terms of the Goldstone mode, you can just go to nonlinear realization A, so you're generating a potential for the Goldstone direction from these kinds of contributions, right? And the important kind of generic fact about these contributions is that, so you can expand for a small value of the electroweak symmetry breaking BEV into a quadratic and quartic term for the Goldstone. And the important point is that these, so for this potential, they balance and you get a kind of generic expectation that even if you add extra contributions to these terms, to the Goldstone potential from other physics breaking the global symmetry, the natural value for the electroweak BEV is of same order as the total U4 breaking BEV, right? So this, we'll see, leads to some tension with Higgs couplings. And this is a generic, so you can realize a Goldstone Higgs by different embeddings, but this is a generic expectation that you end up with this, and the natural value of the electroweak symmetry breaking BEV of order, the total BEV of the field. So it's of order F, B of order F. The other generic problem is that you get a quadratic sensitivity to the scale cutting off the top partners, so the scale cutting off the top loop in what will ultimately be the Higgs mass. So this coefficient is what sets the scale of the Higgs potential, or what sets really the quartic contribution, right? So that's what's related to the physical Higgs mass that we measure. And now we know that the physical Higgs mass is 125 GeV. That gives a actually quite severe constraint on this, that the scale cutting off the top loop can be at most one or two times this value F, right? Otherwise you generate, or otherwise you have to tune down this quartic contribution. Okay, and yes, this is also kind of a generic problem with these pseudo-Nambu Goldstone boson Higgs models. Okay, so let's talk quickly about this. So there's a nice geometric intuition about this. It's just, you know, the simple fact that as I make V much smaller than F, then I'm pushed down to a point where the Goldstone direction looks much more like just the linear realization of the Higgs, right? So motion in the Goldstone direction looks just like a standard model of Higgs. And that's kind of the generic reason why you, to get a Higgs with standard model-like properties in a Goldstone model, you need to have this hierarchy in BEVs. And I'll talk later about what are the actual limits on these couplings. But you know, generically, this kind of sets a direct limit on this ratio of V squared over F squared. And in the model we'll be talking about, this leads to, at 95% confidence level F greater than about 500 GeV. Okay, so that's something that the twin Higgs mechanism will not help us fix. But this other problem will be completely solved by the twin Higgs mechanism. And so this is the point, solving this issue of decoupling the Higgs mass from the quadratic sensitivity to whatever is cutting off the top loops. Okay, so how does this work? So we're going to start off with, we'll just think about the top correction. And we'll introduce just a mirror partner of the top that couples to this HB. So we'll add dynamics to the lower component of the multiplet. And we'll give it the exact same number of degrees of freedom and the exact same new color coupling. Right? So now the contribution we're going to generate is going to have both a contribution from the A top and the B top of the same size. Okay? And now here's where the miracle happens, is that if you just expand out this quadratic term, even though what we've really put in is just a Z2 symmetry exchanging the A sector particles with the B sector particles. So that's our input here. But what we get out in this quadratic coupling is a fully U4 symmetric contribution. So this Z2 symmetry is enough to guarantee that the quadratic contributions to the Higgs potential from the coupling of the standard model respect the global symmetry. So they won't lift the Goldstone direction. And you can see this easily either by expanding components or just by putting in the Goldstone realization, the nonlinear realization of the Goldstone, right? That you decouple this contribution to Higgs mass from the Goldstone. So this is the twin Higgs mechanism, is this miracle of just putting in a Z2 symmetry, giving you an accidental U4 in the most important, in accidentally preserving the global symmetry in the most important diagram for experimental limits. So it's useful to see how this breaks down and to look at what is the dominant contribution to the U4 breaking. And this will come from diagrams that are quartic in these A and B parameterization of the fields, right? So if you just write down the contribution, the usual quartic contribution from the top sector, then you get a contribution. It does not have the accidental U4 symmetry, so it's C2 symmetric, but does not preserve the U4. But what happens is, because these are quadratic diagrams, we've replaced the quadratic sensitivity to the cutoff with a nice soothing log sensitivity to the cutoff, which will actually be exactly what we need to generate a Higgs potential that gives us the right Higgs mass. So the important points, so this will be the dominant contribution to the potential for the Goldstone, wasn't it? These diagrams, so the quartic terms coming from the top sector.
But don't you generally generate the too small of a quartic this way?
No, so. Yeah, so you need a, if you want to generate the entire quartic from the center, then you need to push the stops up quite high. So there's going to be, there's a nice fact about the Higgs mass that you get an extra factor of 2 in these models. That actually means that if you wanted to generate completely the Higgs mass radiatively, so in, this is what they do in the composite twin Higgs models, you can get the right Higgs mass for a cutoff of 5 or 6 TeV. For the top sector. So I'll show where this extra factor of 2 is crucial for these models and for what I'll discuss. I'll show you where it comes from.
You mean
shortly.
By the key, you get the large log quantity over MD being large?
You use the large log, but you only need tops, or you only need the cutoff to be at order 5 TeV, which now, so in the MSSM, this would give you too small of a contribution if you only had the stop contribution, right? But we get an extra factor here, which I'll explain. Okay, so, yeah, but the important points are this log sensitivity of the Higgs pole mass, right, which gives you for 5 or 10 TeV scale of top partners the right Higgs mass, and the fact that the minimum of this potential is at the symmetric value of HA equals HB, which is just this fact I told you, that the natural values for the electroweak symmetry ring BEV is of order F. Okay. So this is just for a stop sector. So now we have to talk about what else we need to do. Yeah, this is of course important. So let me finish talking about the stop sector, and then I'll address the rest. Yeah. So we're going to expand the mirror symmetry to include electroweak corrections. Okay. So there's just one useful piece of insight from looking at this correction of just trying to understand why this works for the quadratic diagrams, but not the quartic diagrams. So why the twin production works. In fact, you can write down a quartic term that would be symmetric under the full U4, under the full global symmetry, right? Just this square of HA squared plus HB squared. But this would introduce this would introduce couplings between HAs and HBs. And if we want to write down, if we want to have radiative corrections generate these diagrams, then you need to introduce new particles with masses near the top that have SU2 and SU3 charges. So you can work through that to couple the HA and HB in the right way. You need to introduce particle charges, which this is exactly what we want to avoid doing to avoid experimental limits. So really the crucial point about the twin Higgs mechanism is just that the Z2 is just enough to get the accidental symmetry in the most important diagrams. And to do that, you only need to keep the particles that you'd add to restore the full U4, which are not charged under the standard model. So this is kind of the crucial point. So you could think about the twin Higgs mechanism as starting with restoring the entire global symmetry, and then just projecting out the new particles you've added that are charged under both gauge groups, right? And that is just enough to preserve the cancellation in the dominant quadratic diagrams. Okay, and one important point is that it gets a little bit confusing talking about quartic and quadratic in these two realizations. So, you know, the quadratic diagram in terms of these HA and B fields introduces a quartic for the Goldstone mode, right, through this nonlinear realization. And this is the thing that we wanted to get rid of. And this is what we're getting rid of. But the dominant contributions are coming from quadratic in this HA, or quartic in these HA and HB fields. Okay, great. Okay, so we know how to protect ourselves in the top sector. Now we need to talk about how much we need to expand this symmetry, right, to get a full model. So in the top sector, all we really needed was the number of degrees of freedom for the B sector top to be equal, and the gauge coupling at the appropriate scale, or sorry, the Yukawa coupling at the appropriate scale to be equal between the two sectors. But there's also a important one-loop electroweak correction. So this is smaller than the top correction, but is if we're pushing up the scale to a higher scale, then this is very important that we cut this off also. And so it's natural to just gauge the SU2 cross U1 in the hidden sector as well. So in this B sector or mirror sector, you can gauge SU2 cross U1. And this will, by the exact same mechanism, cancel the large quadratic contributions from the gauge sector. And to do this, you need to introduce symmetry and the symmetry between the gauge couplings. In the specific model we're working in, of course, we had to do this anyway to eat the extra goldstones. I had these three leftover goldstones in the B sector that you need to get rid of. Okay, good. Now,
so how heavy are
they? They are, the ratio is just F squared over B squared. So the ratio in squared masses, or sorry, the ratio in mass is F over B times the Z mass and W mass. But they are not charged. They don't have any mixing with the standard model gauge bosons. Yeah, you only couple through the Higgs sector. So for instance, they, even more importantly, if we introduce mirror fermions, the Higgs can are the light Higgs, which is mostly in the A sector can decay invisibly to the B sector particles. Yeah, so this is part of the limits that come from Higgs couplings, which I'll talk about. Yeah, so there is a mirror photon. The mixing is small enough that it can actually remain massless. So there's a charge conjugation symmetry separately in the A and B sector that prevents you from, eventually you will generate mixing, but it's generally a very high loop order. And it looks like it. Yes. Yes. I'll talk about cosmology a little bit at the end. Yes. So the cosmology is in the fine print for this talk. But yeah, if remind me at the end of the talk, and I have a slide on this. But yeah, let me talk about the great things about this model first before I come to that. Okay. So now the question is what to do about SU3. So the simplest thing, right, to do is just to promote this to a full symmetry, so just make a full B sector standard model, right, charged under a exact copy of the gauge group. There's two reasons. The reason you would want to do this is to get rid of two loop corrections coming from diagrams with the gauge bosons, right? But really, what you're worried about is if this mirror symmetry originates at a high scale, obviously through the running of the couplings, you're going to spoil the mirror symmetry that you use to protect yourself from the top contributions. So that's kind of what you're really worried about here. So one interesting thing that I'm not going to talk about, but it would be interesting to think of to talk about models where the mirror symmetry emerges at a low scale, so you don't have to extend the particle content so much. After we've done extended the gauge group and extended the third generation, the last question is, do you need copies of the first and second generations and the tau and B? And you know, as you mentioned, for cosmology, you may not want these light extra states around, just like you may not want these light gauge states around. But from the point of view of a high-scale completion of the mirror symmetry, you need to have these states around to preserve the equality of the gauge couplings, right? So the attitude I will take is that we'll push off the scale of the mirror symmetry to a high scale, and so we'll need this full Z2 symmetry. I should mention that the way we'll solve the cosmological problems is by not requiring an exact symmetry between the Yukawa couplings of the light fermions. And it's easy to imagine how this, so this, of course, won't be a problem for contributions to Higgs mass because these are already small contributions. And you can come up with models where asymmetric VEVs generate these asymmetries in Yukawa couplings.
Our Higgs and mirror Higgs are coupled somehow, right? Our Higgs couples to normal particles, so there will be processes where we can, through this Higgs couplings, radiate very light particles from that new sector, like photons.
Yeah, I mean, this would. I mean, this is the issue of is there mixing between the photon or not, right? Oh, you mean from production?
From the amplitude, the emission of, I don't know, two new gamma primes. Right? I mean, you can go way below weak scale and be still, can complete contradiction to
yeah, let me put it this way, that the cosmology of the B sector. Okay, well, I mean, so this, so you mean higher energy processes?
Take an explosion and a supernova, and I would consider a process where I emit two gamma primes. There will be, the rate for this will be, even if you make the rate for this much smaller than the weak rate, you still have a problem because you take away energy from this position.
No,
it's
like you only couple through the Higgs sector, and so you.
So there are charged particles in your new Higgs sector that are charged under gamma primes, right? So in principle, there are operators that couple gamma
primes to
normal particles. Right? So, it's why higher dimensional
operators. Yeah. Yes, that's true. I haven't looked at, I don't know if anyone has looked at the limits on these. In the original papers on the twin magnetism by Roni and company, they did not talk about this. We didn't do anything new for the cosmology or astrophysics. So I do think that they would be, these processes would be pretty suppressed though. But I haven't thought carefully about it. There's a whole other issue of the cosmology of the dark sector, right? There's many potential dark matter candidates, but you also have to worry about interactions in the dark sector. So I think there's actually lots of interesting things you can do with phenomenology of the dark sector in terms of astrophysics and cosmology. That's not what I'm gonna focus on. Okay, great. So we're set up for everything to understand everything in terms of this Goldstone decoupling limit. The only last detail is how do you get this asymmetry in VEVS? So you need to put in some by hand Z2 breaking to force the VEV to be more in the B direction than the A direction, so the forces hierarchy in B over F. This is technically natural to do, though. You can put in, so the point of view we'll take is that we'll just put these in by hand, and they're dimensionful parameters that aren't going to introduce any new tuning in the model. For example, this delta M squared Z2 breaking mass between the A and B sector Higgs can easily force an asymmetric BEV. You could also do it with a hard breaking in these quartic terms and UV completed to be a soft breaking. There's not really any advantages to doing that. Now we come to the important point of the Higgs mass, which we can understand the most important things just from this Goldstone limit. The crucial point is that at this symmetric value of the VEV, so V equals F, or the A and the B sector VEVs are equal, you just get a mass for the light Higgs state that is equal to the mass you would have got if you just had the A sector, so you just had the standard model sector. So what's happening is you're basically getting half the contribution from each of the quartic couplings in the A and B sector. But the crucial point is that we need to be at the limit where the Higgs is standard model-like, so V over F is small. And in this limit, you get a non-decoupling contribution from, so you might have expected that when the Goldstone direction is in the standard model-like direction, that you just get the A sector quartic coupling, so the normal standard model quartic. But in fact, you get a non-decoupling contribution from the quartic in the B sector also. So it comes from, if you want to see it diagrammatically, there's a diagram that feels the U-force metric quartics if you have a perturbative completion and the U4 breaking in the B sector. Right. And so this actually ends up giving you a factor of 2 in the limit that V goes to 0, or that V over F goes to 0 in what your Higgs mass prediction would be. So yeah, this is crucial, of course, to getting the phenomenology to work. Of course, when we add this soft breaking, we had to add soft breaking to get a, these labels are backwards. Sorry, we had to add soft breaking to cancel against the dominant quartic contributions that gave us a symmetric VEV, right? And this is obviously gonna lead to some tuning. And there's a nice formula. When you break a mirror, it's bad luck. And we'll our bad luck takes the form of inevitable tuning in these models, which, as I said earlier, is just goes like the ratio of f over v squared. So what's interesting is that this ratio f over v squared tells you directly about tuning of the Higgs sector and is directly constrained by the Higgs measurements, by Higgs properties. So let me say one further detail about the tuning is that this mechanism works extremely well, especially in the composite case. So, and I think this is not so widely known. I'm going to give an advertisement for the original models, which are composite models that implement this mechanism, that even with a completion of the, with top partners around 5 or 6 TeV, these models can have, depending on your ratio F over V, tuning from 10 to 30%. So this is consistent with everything we know and will remain consistent after LHC 14. So I imagine that Roni wakes up and asks himself this question every morning and looks at his paper. So our goal will be to do a supersymmetric completion that preserves some of this. We'll get some benefits from doing the supersymmetric completion, but we won't get as low of tuning as these models. So the question of how do you go from the Goldstone limit to a full model? So the first question you have to ask is how do you want to realize the dynamics of the full Higgs potential that give rise to the Goldstone? So there's two options, right? There's really some perturbative physics just giving you a VEV, and you have a hierarchy in scales so that, so in this example, you have a U4 symmetric quartic coupling and a U4 symmetric mass for your Higgs. That generate your VEV F. And there's a hierarchy so that the radial oscillations essentially are decoupled from the Goldstone mode, right? So this requires that this quartic coupling, this U4 symmetric quartic is much larger than the U4 breaking contributions we get radiatively. And an important, so the most important point here is that the quadratic sensitivity to cutoff re-enters into your tuning through this mechanism. So the point is that the twin mechanism protects the Goldstone direction from the quadratic diagrams, to give the quadratic diagrams from the top sector, but the overall VEV, right, the scale of F is not protected by the twin symmetry, right? So this tuning in this MH squared is going, so the tuning in the VEV F coming from the U4 symmetric quartic will be sensitive to quadratically to the scale in our model of the stops. But the crucial point is that it can be suppressed by this large coupling lambda, so this large U4 symmetric quartic, whereas in the MSM or in the standard model, you know what the value of this quartic is. It has to give you 125 TeV, and that gives you a pretty small value of a quartic, so you don't win anything by suppressing. So this is kind of the critical point, is that where the decrease in tuning in these models comes from is this ratio of what the standard model quartic has to be to what how large this U4 symmetric quartic can be. And so the other option for UV completing these models, which is what the original models added, is just that these are really the Goldstones of some strongly coupled sector. You can interpret this roughly as taking the limit of this quartic coupling going to 4 pi, right? Is it, or 4 pi squared is mocks up the solution. OK. Good. So now how do you take that Higgs potential and embed it in a solution to the full hierarchy problem? So as I said, there's the composite solution where you just imagine that the top engaged partners are coming from the same dynamics that give you this composite, these composite Goldstones for the Higgs. These have some advantage that the phenomenology is a little bit less constrained. So the top partners are a little bit less constrained than the super partners. And you're able to get better fine tuning in these models. We're going to take the alternative approach, which is to use SUSY to UV complete this. This is a natural thing to do if you have a perturbative completion for the Goldstone sector, right, for the Higgs potential. The advantages of doing this will be, as I said, we'll preserve MSSM-like gauge coupling unification in the twin and standard model sector. So one issue related to what Maxime mentioned earlier about the mixing with the U1 is that in these composite models, it's hard to UV complete it without introducing matter charged under both sectors, which leads to mixing with the U1, and so you have to deal with either decoupling the U1 through an asymmetric BEV, or somehow UV completing without introducing mixing. In the SUSY model, you don't introduce matter charged under both sectors, so you avoid generating large mixings between U1s, and you can keep the U1 massless. So this is somewhat attractive. You get the normal electroweak and flavor, which is, so I should say that in this sector, you're able to push, in the composite models, you're able to push the strong scale up to about 10 TeV, so you're not as worried about electroweak constraints.
F square over V square minus 1.
Which statement?
So if the degree of tuning is F square over V square minus 1, and you have tuning, you said that tuning is like 0.3,
mm-hmm.
doesn't that imply an F value of like a TeV?
F is a TeV, but so F is a TeV, so that means that. The mirror W and mirror Z will be light, but they don't enter into the precision observable. So there's no mixing between the gauge sector of the A and B sector. This is an important point.
That's incredible.
Yeah, in fact, yeah, so the modification, so yeah, so what we see already, yeah, so. Yeah. So yeah, 30% is right on the 95% line if you do. Yeah, it's kind of on the edge of the 95% excluded is 30%. 10% is more realistic for the Higgs coupling fits. And yeah, what you find is that the IR contributions to electroweak precision are giving you right now comparable constraints on the ratio V over F to electroweak precision. And after LHC-14, the coupling fits will get a little bit stronger than electroweak precision. So the point is that I guess the UV contributions in the composite models are decoupled like 4 pi f, right? So that's the sense in which maybe you aren't so worried about electroweak precision here if you can already push the scale up to 10 TeV with an untuned model, right? But no, yeah, the V over F IR tuning is unavoidable. Okay, so what else will we gain from looking at this from the SUSY UV completion perspective? We can calculate things pretty effectively in SUSY. So in particular, we'll be able to really use our precise knowledge of the Higgs potential to see what the constraints of the Higgs mass are on how natural these models can be. And we can calculate kind of an honest tuning where we're really taking into account the full structure of the potential and the fact that it's running from the messenger scale. So we'll actually do a pretty careful calculation of the fine tuning of these models. And we can compare it to a nice benchmark, which is the NMSSM. And in the SUSY model, because you get some interesting phenomenology for the lightest, the next to lightest Higgs state, which is not present in the composite models. In the end, we'll win a little bit in tuning, we'll pay a price in tuning to do the SUSY completion instead of the composite completion. But since there's only two ways to complete these models that we know about, either composite or SUSY, I think it's certainly interesting to think about the SUSY completion regardless, and there are some advantages to doing it. Okay. To sum up the state so far, the important things, generalities about the Goldstone-Boson-Higgs solutions are that they suffer generally from V over F tuning from Higgs couplings and electroweak precision, which the twin Higgs mechanism will not solve. And then they suffer from this Higgs mass tuning, the quadratic sensitivity to the top sector cutoff, that the twin Higgs mechanism does solve, but then reintroduces in a ameliorated fashion through the ratio of the quartic couplings. And the important point that the twin Higgs mechanism, the reason the twin Higgs mechanism can do this is because it partially restores the symmetry in exactly the way you need to cancel the dominant contributions, and it does so without introducing any new Sternmüller gauge charged particles. Yeah. Okay, so how do we embed this in supersymmetry? Actually, how am I doing on time? Is
pretty badly.
No, well, it's, so this, these were the important things. But when does the seminar end? Is okay. Oh, let me. I've done a very thorough build-up to this section, so it should go fairly quickly. So how do you? It's very simple to embed this model in the MSSM. So all you have to do is add a. So you do it in the most obvious way, which is just to put the A and B Higgs, an A and B sector Higgs for both the Higgs up and Higgs down, and then use a singlet portal to couple the A and B sector, and require a Z2 symmetry also in the soft terms. The singlet coupling can generate a large quartic coupling that respects the U4 symmetry, and the soft terms also generate quadratic terms that respect U4 symmetry. So the interesting point here is that in these models, the Z2 symmetry and the field constant really automatically gives you the full U4 symmetry, including in the dominant quartic term, right? Whereas in composite models, you had to legislate the Goldstone dynamics respect to U4, and then they're broken down to just the Z2. So here, in a sense, the U4 is kind of more emergent from the Z2 than in the composite models. Okay, so how does the breaking of U4 change in the MSM? The only new contribution is that there's tree-level breaking of the U4 symmetry from the D terms in the MSM. But this is numerically about the same level as the contribution from the quartic in the top sector. And in fact, this helps us get the right Higgs mass. So Lawrence Hall and company and Adam Fichelski and people have written down supersymmetric twin Higgs completions. In their work, they went through a lot of effort and threw away gauge coupling unification and added a lot of structure to get rid of these D-term contributions. And there's actually not really any advantage in tuning or in the Higgs mass to doing this. So this is kind of the two important differences with what we did is we don't go through these acrobatics and we do very precisely the interpretation of the new Higgs measurements in these models. And then numerically, you can make this this U4 breaking quartic coupling is small compared to the U4 preserving one. So the Goldstone approximation is very good. Okay, the important point of the Higgs theory is actually you just have a normal two-step decoupling. So the B term, the U4 symmetric B term breaks, you have this U4 across U4, but it gets just broken down to the original U4 we had in the standard model and the twin standard model sector. So you really can decouple the Higgs sector into SUSY states with extra contributions, so A and B sector pseudoscalars and charged Higgs, at a scale much higher than the standard than the twin standard model states. And so what you're left with is just the light states that I already discussed, the IR twin states. And the most important one of these phenomenologically is the next to lightest Higgs state, which is mostly in the B sector. So you can do the Higgs mass carefully in the MSM, right? So there are a number of important order 10% contributions that you actually need to include. And the reason you need to do this is that the tuning that we'll end up getting is very sensitive to tan beta. And of course, the Higgs mass is very sensitive to tan beta because this controls the size, the D-term contribution, and the radiative contribution. And the point is that, so this is a little bit hard to see. This is 125 GeV Higgs plus minus a few GeV. And the important point is that For light stops, the radii of corrections are small, so you need a large D-term contribution to the Higgs mass. And for large stop masses, you can have small tan beta because you don't need as large of a D-term contribution. And yeah, the reason this is working, and we're getting the right Higgs mass for stops of a few TeV, even with small tan beta, is because we have this factor of 2 from getting both the A and B sector quartic for the Goldstone mass. OK, so what is the tuning of this model? There's this V over F tuning just set by tuning the soft Z2 breaking against the radii of contributions. And then there's this regular supersymmetric tuning of the stop masses contributing to the Higgs mass squared, which sets the VEV F, right? So the issue is that the combined tuning is just the product of the F tuning and the V over F tuning. And this, in the limit that the stops are much heavier than F, the F sensitivity actually drops out, and you can write down simple formula. So in the limit that it's just, say, the tuning from the stop in the mass squared of the Higgs up, the tuning is just proportional to the corrections and crucially divided by this large U4 symmetric coupling. OK.
And I'd be suspicious. Like, if delta F is smaller than 1 for large enough F, then I'm
sorry. Yeah, sorry. So this is, yeah, so you'll saturate. So if you make the stops the same mass as F, then you saturate. You can't win by increasing the quartic anymore, right? Yeah, so there's, when the stop mass divided by the quartic is the order of the Higgs mass, you stop winning, the Higgs stop mass squared. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah, so since we will want to have heavy stops for phenomenology, let's just assume the stops are much heavier than lambda F, right? So then the tuning in F will just go like the radii of contribution from the stops divided by lambda. Right, so in that limit, you're winning the whole. You're getting the whole benefit of having a large lambda suppressing the stop contribution. This is the point. A useful way to understand what we're winning here is just to compare tunings to the NMSSM. So in the NMSSM, we can fix. So in the NMSSM, in the decoupling limit, we'll just use the scalar dynamics to get the right quartic to have the standard observed Higgs mass. And you can roughly compare what the tuning in these two models will be. And you get this nice simple formula that's just this 2 lambda squared sine squared 2 beta. And this tan beta dependence is just coming from the size of this U4 symmetric coupling. It has this lambda squared from the singlet, but really it also has a sine squared 2 beta coming from just it's the quartic is between Higgs up and Higgs down, right? So interestingly, the size you can get for lambda and how low of tan beta you can go to are the crucial parameters for how tuned this model is. From this formula, you can expect lambda order 1 to 2.5 and low tan beta. You can get a factor of a few to 10 times improvement in tuning. But what you're fighting against is perturbativity of the coupling and the Higgs mass for tan beta, right?
So are you demanding that the two number,
are
you
demanding
about
lambda
that's
staying
perturbative up to the gut scale? Or?
Yeah, so I'll come back to you. So that would be a disaster, though, for this. So no, I won't do that. Good, so now that was a sketch of what the tuning will work out. We can actually do a very careful job of evaluating the tuning with a messenger scale of 100 times the stop mass and carefully doing the tuning with respect to all of the UV parameters. And then we can compare that to a suitable animus SM where we evaluate the tuning in the same kind of way. So we can make as much as possible an apples to apples comparison. And then, so this crucial thing is how large can the singlet coupling be? On this plot, we have 10 beta going from 1 to 5 and the singlet coupling 0 to 2. For a singlet coupling larger than 1.5, you run to a Landau pool before the messenger scale, so before this 100 times the stop mass, which I will say is not, I'm not going to allow. And for 10 beta less than 2, you'll run, okay, perfect. For 10 beta less than 2, you'll run to a Landau pool in the Yukawa coupling before the gut scale, so you'll give up gauge coupling unification when you have to complete the top Yukawa. So that is kind of what's setting the limits on this theory. You could go to a lower scale for the completion, increase lambda, but then you're running into questions of how do you really complete it. Yeah, so the crucial thing is, it doesn't matter that you hit a, well, it matters, but you can hit a Landau pole in the singlet sector and still complete that sector without spoiling gauge coupling unification using a slim fat Higgs type of completion. Okay, so let me skip the detailed plots and just come to the end. So the rough message of these plots is you get a factor of 4 or 5 improvement depending on the stop mass versus the animus SM, right? So this is because there's some interplay between what value of tangent beta you can have for a given stop mass. You can, of course, if you want to stop worrying about getting the right value of the Higgs mass, you can just put in some extra U4 breaking cortex with a extra singlet sector. And then you can just get a factor of 4 improvement over the NMSM over the entire range. So what does this mean? If you get a factor of 4 improvement at the current limits of about a TeV, then you have a 10% tuned model, or 3% for 2 TeV stops, which are probably safe in a reasonable spectrum from the LHC-14. So we can settle the bill for naturalness. And what did we give up? So going to this complicated model, we got a factor of 3 or 4 in tuning, depending on whether or not we include the Higgs mass contributions. If you wanted to take the singlet completion to a very low scale, so 10 TeV, then you're giving up some of the predictivity of the theory. But you get another factor of about 2 improvement, bringing you up to 5% tuning for 2 TeV stops. If you just throw away the perturbativity of the top Yukawa and go to very low 10 beta, so this is giving up gauge coupling unification, you can get to 10% tuning after LHC-14. And then there's kind of a sense in which you approach the composite limit if you just take the compositeness scale of the singlet sector all the way to the soft scale. And there you get, as you might expect, kind of untuned models, but you have this, you've kind of given up everything because you don't have any real control about what's actually going on here. Okay, so the message about tuning is, well, how important is a factor of 3 or 4 in understanding what we mean for tuning? I guess an important reference point is that going from 8 TeV to 14 TeV at the LHC, we expect the limits on tuning in generic models to change by a factor of 3 or 4, right? They go like the mass squared and the mass reach goes like the energy. So maybe a factor of 3 or 4 is not such a bad thing in our understanding of the state of naturalness. Okay, the summary of Higgs pheno is that there's some very interesting phenomenology for this heavier Higgs state. It has a strong coupling to the light Higgs state, so that it generally has an order 1 branching fraction to a di Higgs final state, which has very interesting signatures. Already, you think you might be able to get access to, at some level, to the standard model production for di Higgs, and this can have cross sections of a few to 10 times that. So this is probably the most interesting observable at the 14 TeV LHC for these models. And this is something that doesn't really happen in a two Higgs doublet model, for instance, unless you go to a very extended model parameter space. So this is the most interesting signature. And then, of course, the limits on the couplings directly constrain this V over F ratio, which is kind of the irreducible tuning of the model. So let me conclude. the main points are that composite and SUSY twin Higgs models are providing some of the least tuned models that are still around after LHC-8, and that could still be around after LHC-14. And we have this great new tool of the precise understanding of the Higgs couplings and mass that lets us really explore these models and understand what they mean for naturalness. The SUSY twin Higgs, in particular, preserves some of the successes of SUSY. Higgs in the right mass range, gauge coupling unification, electroweak precision test safety, and gives a factor of about 4 improvement in tuning compared to a more parsimonious model like the NMSSM, which translates to 10% tuning at current stop limits. If you want to give up gauge coupling unification, then you win another factor of 4 in tuning. So this is a kind of qualitative measure of, in these kinds of models, what is gauge coupling worth? What is the exchange rate between gauge coupling and tuning? And the last point is that the SUSY twin Higgs sector has some really interesting Higgs phenomenology that might not have been motivated by your expectation from simpler models. Okay, thank you. So sorry I went into overtime.
Yeah, so I'm happy to talk about the cosmology afterwards.
I have a general question. Has anyone calculated the gamma-gamma prime mixing out of emerging out of the Higgs particle? Because it's a finite contribution. It's not going to be log UV sensitive. So it has to involve top loops because you start from the charge symmetric operator, and you end up with the charge on operator on both gauge groups. So it has to be like probably top prime loops.
Mixing will be a log of the top prime divided by the top mass.
Yeah, no, everything will be saturated by the electroweak scale, everything will go there, but it looks like you have to go to a high loop order, and I was trying to put it in my head at the wet high loop order. Mind you, the constraints will be very tight, right?
If you have a massive, so the out is you can fairly simply put in dynamics to break the U1 into the V sector without introducing any tuning directly to electroweak.
But you don't necessarily want to do that. Right?
No, that introduces other problems. So then how are the fermions in the Higgs sector now? And so there's a ladder of concerns you can go through in the Higgs sector when you start worrying carefully about the cosmology. In the original, so this is why it's appealing to not break E1 and just rely on the small mixing. In the original twin Higgs papers by Roni and company, there's this charge conjugation symmetry in both the A and B sector independently that protects you to a fairly high order. I think they calculated out to 3 loop order, there's no contribution to the mixing. It's possible, so in the MSSM, that charge conjugation symmetry is still there, but there's possibly, so from this singlet portable, the singlet portal is a little bit different than just having a quartic portal without any UV completion. And it's possible that there are new mixing terms coming through that, but we did not calculate them. There were no obvious new contributions, but we didn't go to a high enough order to see if you really are safe from observables or not.
So as far as the high energy theta, what's the first deviation from standard model
that
you expect to see?
In terms of the super partners, for instance?
The first is it a super partner? Is it a Higgs pheno? Is it an exotic?
The first deviation you'd expect to see, actually, this is nice. So you'd expect to see at 10% tuning in the V over F ratio, you might expect to be sensitive to deviations at LHC14. Really, the best way to probe these models is with a linear collider that can do precise Higgs physics.
Basically, precision Higgs physics.
But yeah,
it's much, much better than the precision
Higgs partners. The precision Higgs at the ILC.
These
incredible.
Exotic Higgs measurements that you're talking about, are those also sort of far deep asymptotic?
No, so you can get to the. So at LHC14, you could get potentially to a TV Higgs of this heavier Higgs state.
Okay.
If the V over F. So this depends kind of on V over F. But the cross section is not that small, right? So, but the cross section there is V over F suppressed. So there's some sense in which there's an interplay between these two things. The nice thing is that if you measured a V over F discrepancy and found this heavy Higgs state, then that actually fixes the properties of the potential, and you have the nice prediction for the natural scale for the superpartners in this theory. But that's a whimsical scenario.
So you're producing the heavy Higgs that mixes with the light Higgs that I gave into two light Higgs.
Oh, well, it's actually through this quartic coupling. It's not the decay is not suppressed by the mixing. So that's why you get an order one decay rate to die Higgs and to the W and Zs of the hidden sector for the heavy Higgs state.
How big is this over standard model line Higgs background?
It can be quite big. So
okay.
Standard model that Higgs at 14 TeV is, I think, 25 femtobarns. At 1 TeV, this cross section, I think, is order 5 femtobarns. This depends on the mixing.
Okay.
But for a 500 GeV, up to, I think it's 500 femtobarns. So this is a very accessible signature for at least some of the mass range. Yeah, actually, there is a
500 GeV still consistent with the current. Higgs precision?
500 GeV is on the 95%.
Okay.
This depends on lambda and time data, but yeah, roughly it's on the 95%.
Okay.
Yeah, there's actually a CMS search that just came out for 8 GeV for the die Higgs. Of course, it doesn't come close to putting limits.
Okay, well, let's end Kyle again.